In this episode of Police and the People, we're going to be doing our leadership nugget, specifically the Stockdale Paradox, and we'll be taking a question from one of our listeners. Why don't you take it away, Tim?
All right, but first, before we move on to that, just to let everyone know, we are now on Patreon. Patreon is a platform where you can donate to our cause, to this, the cause of this podcast.
Yes.
All right. We do have bills to pay. They're not too much, but we do have some. We want to be able to pay our engineer, and we have to subscribe to certain platforms as well. So if you go to patreon.com/thepoliceandthepeople, again, that's patreon.com/thepoliceandthepeople, and commit to donating something, $2 a month, $3 a month, just every little bit counts. And again, it just helps us keep this platform alive, all right? And also, when you get a chance, go to our company's website. It's GSPCC, but the website is gs-pcc.com. When it came time to grab that website, it was already taken. GSPCC.com was already taken, so I had to put a hyphen in there. So if you're looking for any kind of law enforcement training, give us a call. Check us out. We've got plenty to offer. And we can even travel out to your area, provided that the hosting criteria is met. But you can read about the hosting criteria on our website. All right, hit the music. Everyone, how you doing, Josh?
Wonderful, doing yep. Great.
How you doing, Lucas?
Doing excellent.
Good, good. You know, Lucas is just recovering from a cold. He's got his little bag of snot rags over here next to us.
Super pleasant.
Throw that away when you leave, okay?
Oh, yeah. Burn it for you.
Yeah, take that with you.
So you doing well, Josh?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. We're getting ready. We have a big class coming up here in a few weeks. New Britain, Connecticut.
Yeah, new territory.
Yeah. Working, controlling, and managing major cases. Instructor John Urardi, fantastic instructor.
Mm-hmm.
He's taught this class a few times for us. He's taught it all over the country.
Yeah, he does travel quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's gotten great reviews when he's had the time to do it for us. And like I said, it's going to be coming up at the New Britain Police Department in December 2019.
There you go, New Britain. I've noticed that, maybe you've noticed as well on the podcast, that Josh is not as grumpy as he usually is. And I think that's because he's creeping up on retirement.
Yeah, it's coming up just a few weeks, about 5.5-6 weeks, and I will be retired.
Yeah.
From full-time police work, almost 24 years.
24 years. That is a huge chapter you're going to close in your life.
Yeah.
But you're going to look back and go, I did a good job. You know,
where the hell did my youth go?
Yeah, that's exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you. I've been saying I'm going to be a trophy husband to my wife. And as we were joking about, the trophy will be the participation trophy.
It's the trophy nonetheless.
Trophy husband, participation trophy. So.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so our leadership nugget today, we're going to be talking about the Stockdale Paradox. And why don't you take that away, Josh?
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite blocks of our leadership class, is talking about the Stockdale Paradox. And you, Tim, were the person that first kind of turned me on to it. I wasn't familiar with it. So
I became familiar with it in Collins' book, Good to Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's where I read about it.
So for our listeners, if you're not familiar with James Stockdale. He was a POW in Vietnam. What branch of the military?
Navy. He was Navy.
Navy veteran. And he was a POW at the Hanoi Hilton, one of the most notoriously brutal POW camps. And what James Stockdale recognized was that even the the prisoners there needed to have structure. They needed to have stability. So some of the things that he did was create kind of a chain of command, create a form of communication between the prisoners.
Because he was the ranking guy there, ranking prisoner.
Right. Yeah. He was the highest ranking prisoner there. Exactly. And, you know, he recognized that, that the men that were being held captive needed to have a purpose if they were going to survive. So that's what he did. He was, you know, relatively successful with that and suffered and survived, you know, really brutal, brutal circumstances. And then ultimately when he was released, he got into the world of academia. He and his wife wrote a book called In Love and War. It's alternating chapters, him discussing his experiences as serving in Vietnam and being a POW, her discussing her experiences of being the wife of a POW, and you know, just really powerful, powerful stuff. And one of the things that he realized was the difference between optimism and blind optimism when faced with, you know, a terribly difficult task. What do you think about that, Tim?
Well, yeah, that's where the paradox comes in. So if you read anything about Admiral Stockdale, you see that he, one of the observations that he made with the other prisoners, the ones who didn't make it, oftentimes were the ones that were blindly optimistic.
Right,
you know, he would say, okay, you know, or these people would say, all right, we're going to be out by Easter. Easter would come and they didn't get out. Then they'd get ramped up again. All right, we'll be out by Christmas. They were very optimistic, but they were kind of ignoring their situation that they were in.
Their circumstances.
Yeah, because they just kept looking at the light at the end of the tunnel, which wasn't really, it was kind of more of a mirage. And eventually, he said they died of a broken heart.
Yeah, I think it's almost, put yourself in that situation, if it's impossible to do that, but the best we can. So you're counting on being released and going back to your family on a certain date, or roughly a certain date. And when that doesn't happen, how do you regroup? How do you
how do you reconcile that in your mind?
Right. How do you you know, get right with your resolve at that point? You know, to put it into perspective of some of our law enforcement people, on a much smaller level, you ever work a shift and you're wiped out? Maybe it's a midnight shift and you're just waiting for the shift to get over. And then 20 minutes before your shift starts, the supervisor calls you in and says, so-and-so called in sick, you have to stay over.
Yep.
What's that feeling you have?
Oh.
You just say, I was just hanging on by a thread, and now I have to regroup and be able to, you know, go out and do my job.
Mm-hmm.
Multiply that times a million when you're faced with the types of circumstances that a POW was faced with.
Right.
If they set a deadline for when they were going to be released.
And it didn't happen.
And then it doesn't happen. And ultimately, does that person give up? Do they, as you said, die of a broken heart?
Well, to kind of to mirror that, if you will, for those of you that have read Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, he was a Jewish man who was...
World War II,
yeah, and he was at Auschwitz for years. And one of the things that he noticed was the death rate went up around Christmas. And just to kind of read it right here, the death rate in the week between Christmas 1944 and New Year's of 45 increased in camp beyond all previous experience. In his opinion, the explanation for this increase did not lie in the harder working conditions or the deterioration of our food supplies or a change of wealth or new epidemics. It was simply that the majority of the prisoners had lived in a naive hope that they would be released. And it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they died.
Yep.
Yeah.
So from a leadership standpoint, what's the takeaway?
Well, the takeaway from a leadership perspective, as you know, because you helped teach this, we do a whole section on positive leadership. And part of being a positive leader is being optimistic. It's you know, looking for whenever something negative does happen, find a way to learn from it. find a silver lining in it. That's optimism.
But that's not blind optimism.
That's not blind optimism. No. So it's a two-part question here. So you do have to be a positive leader. You know, think about your experiences, even with police work or any other job that you've had. When you had that one boss who was always upbeat and optimistic and energetic, you kind of gravitated to that person because you liked being around them, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Instead of the one that complained and bitched all the time and was just negative, kind of pushed you away. So from a leadership perspective, you want people to follow you, if you will, and you need to be positive, all right? And you need to be optimistic. But here's the dichotomy. So you can't be blindly optimistic. You can't
have be a cheerleader.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can't have an issue in front of you and go, oh, it'll be okay. It's all going to wash out in the end. No, you have to deal with the issue, right? And you can do that and still be optimistic. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that, again, optimism doesn't mean that you're a rah-rah guy. It doesn't mean you're a cheerleader.
No.
It doesn't mean that, like you said, you're an ostrich. It just put my head in the sand and everything will be okay. Optimism could be we have a plan. This is what we have vision. Yeah. This is what we're going to do. It gives a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. Just like when James Stockdale set up a hierarchy with the prisoners. He set up a structure. He set up a form of communication. He gave them purpose because, again, these were servicemen.
Right.
They would respond to this. They would recognize, okay, I have a role here. I have a responsibility. My job is to help the other prisoners so we can all survive.
Exactly.
Now you're creating that collective effort.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're faced with those adverse circumstances, whether it be in your workplace, in your life, when we say you need to have that positive outlook, it may mean that you just need to face the reality. You know, something that he mentioned talking about James Stockdale is that at some point he realized that as brutal as his conditions, as harsh as they were, he realized that at some point in his life he was going to look back on that experience and realize that it was a part of his development as a person,
mm-hmm.
that it was invaluable to him.
Right.
And he said, I never doubted that I was going to survive, but I never, ever turned away from that harsh reality. Mm-hmm. I faced it. I knew it was going to be difficult. So
yeah, it's like if someone is stranded in the woods, you don't just sit at a tree and go, okay, I'm going to be found. I'm optimistic they're going to find me.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to take
some
steps,
initiative.
Yeah, some initiative for your own survival until they do find you, right?
Right. It may mean staying put with your cell phone so that it can be tracked or so someone can, you know, but you have to take steps to help yourself.
Yes.
To just sit back and think it's all going to work out is very, very naive.
Yes.
And he didn't do that. And I think a lot of people, they don't recognize that. They're faced with an adverse circumstance. And what they don't do is kind of, I'll call it embrace the grind of it and just say, this is going to be difficult. This isn't going to be pleasant. However, I am going to achieve this. And there will ultimately be a development component, a learning component to this. I might look back on this someday and say, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Right.
I am glad that this happened this way.
As David Goggins says, you embrace the suck, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
exactly.
I'm sure you guys have all seen Jocko Willink's video on good. It's pretty inspiring. Basically, it's that whenever negative things happen in your life, instead of freaking out and getting all upset, you go, just say good. And then once you say good, you start looking for ways, or you start looking for the silver lining.
Yeah.
It didn't get the promotion. Good. Gives me more time to prepare for the next
one. Yeah. Well, you start looking for solutions.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the good side of it. That's the good part is that you're now having to change in order to get better or to go in a different direction, whatever it is you have to do. Okay. So, so the takeaway here is don't be blind in your optimism. All right. You have to deal with issues that are in front of you. And if they are negative, all right, say good and deal with them and then find ways to learn from them so it doesn't happen again.
Right.
Right.
And I think don't run from challenges.
No, ever. Yeah. Never run from challenges, ever, yeah. ever.
And we're not, you know, we're what certainly
defines
not.
Defines us.
Yeah, and we're not suggesting that our listeners or people in the world of police work or the civilian workforce are going to deal with the same adversity that a POW in Vietnam is dealing with. We're certainly not trying to compare apples and bowling balls, right?
Right.
But we all deal with adversity. We deal with things that sometimes look insurmountable to us. And I always say the march of a million miles starts with one step.
Yeah.
And that's usually the most difficult step is that first one.
Yeah.
Once you get a step or two and you get a couple people on board with that step or two, it does become a little bit easier. Things then do start to fall into place.
Yes.
As you progress.
Yes. And one thing you may have to deal with as a leader when you do start taking these steps, in other words, you're solving problems and dealing with issues, is inevitably you're probably going to have someone on your team that's going to complain about the solution. All right. Just kind of give you a heads up on that. Yeah.
The energy vampires.
They do the boo birds.
Or the boo, yeah.
Yeah. They exist. But the best way to deal with them is just through communication. Just sit down and talk to them, explain what's going on.
And some of those steps that you're taking, you may take two or three steps, quote unquote, and then you might determine these were not the right steps to take and have to change it up. But you were taking steps. They are part of that process, that journey. You know, if you ever have to write a paper and you say, I don't even know where to start, well, just start.
Just start. I agree.
Just start writing down the things you do know about the topic and then let the other stuff fall into place and say, okay, that's what I started with, but that needs to go now in the middle.
For me, I create an outline.
Sure.
Once the outline's done, there's no stopping me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think, you know, I'm not telling people when you have a problem in front of you, just start immediately without thinking about it. That's not what we're saying at all. But we are saying recognize and come to terms with the fact that you have a challenge in front of you and don't shy away from it and then start problem solving.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Get your team on board.
Yeah.
With suggestions solutions.
Absolutely.
All right. So you think we're all done with Stockdale?
I don't know. What do you think, Lucas?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Right, move on. All right. We have a question.
Yeah, let's take the question.
We have a police question. So the question is, can a police officer search my stuff without my permission? Absolutely. No, just kidding.
Well, it depends.
Yeah, that is one of those questions. It depends on the situation. It depends on the state you're in. It depends on some of the constitutional exceptions that exist.
Other exigent circumstances.
Yeah, there are a lot of factors. So let's break down a few, all right? So I'll start off, and I'm going to approach it from a New Hampshire perspective first. New Hampshire, live free or die state.
Yes.
We have a more strict constitution than the federal constitution. And I'll give you an example. And under the federal constitution, if you get pulled over and an officer has probable cause that there is some sort of crime afoot in your vehicle or products thereof,
if you had an open warrant.
Well, let's say there's a smell of marijuana and you're in a state where marijuana is still illegal, right? Mm-hmm. So typically, the smell of it is probable cause that typically meets the probable cause level. Under the federal constitution, the officer can search your car without a warrant due to what they call exigent circumstances in that the car is mobile. It can be driven away. Yeah. But New Hampshire says, not so fast.
Right.
No. This is a different time era. You can call a tow truck.
Right. We have what's called the Sterndale decision.
We have the Sterndale decision. So basically, here are our options in New Hampshire when it comes to that scenario of searching the car. We either get a warrant, we impound the car and get a warrant, or we get consent.
Sure.
And you darn well better be able to back up that consent was free and voluntary. So that's just to give you an idea of where we're coming from in New Hampshire.
Now, when we say it depends, though, if there is a safety concern, that might change things.
There are public safety exceptions.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. So an example of that would be, let's say there's a threat of a bomb threat in
or
a building.
A weapon,
and it's in a red backpack. And that's what, so we got some information that's kind of specific. And then, so we start searching red backpacks. And yep. we can do that because of a public safety issue.
Sure.
All right. So that's kind of a...
And it maybe doesn't always apply to a vehicle. But again, when you have officers that take part in a search without a search warrant, without a legally issued search warrant,
yeah.
I'm going to come back to exigent circumstances. If there is a safety issue, or as you said, if by not searching something, it could be lost later on. Those are the types of things that sometimes can come into play
right.
when we're talking about a search without a search warrant or without a knowing waiver, i.e. permission.
Right, you know? Right. So those are some of the kind of the foundations, and it's going to be different in each state, as I said before, because in some states with that motor vehicle scenario and the marijuana, they can search it right there on the side of the road.
Well, and the other thing to remember is specificity is so important when you're talking about a search. When I say specificity, what I mean is you mentioned red backpack. So is the red backpack, is there a red backpack? Is it in the area where it should be, where mm-hmm. it was reported to be, where it should
right.
be? Is it fresh information? So in other words, somebody right. told me 3 days ago
that there's a
bomb in a red backpack, and well, it's been 3 days, so it probably didn't go off.
It's a bit stale.
Yeah. So the information needs to be, you know, timely. It needs to be specific. You need to be able to point to those specific circumstances to show, yes, the information that we developed, it appears to be credible. And the other thing, when we talk about that credibility, you need to be able to usually point to where you gathered that information. You can't just say, well, this was an anonymous mm-hmm. tip. You know, there are a lot of factors that
you
go
have to
into.
Be able to back up your sources and show that they're credible. I believe that was Aguiar and Spinelli.
There's actually a number of cases that kind of speak to that. We do a whole class on it with constitutional liability, where that is discussed at length with, you know, developing your sources or being able to point to your sources, develop that credibility. So, you know, those are the things.
My favorite quote from Sean, who teaches that class, is if you ever think about doing a strip search, call me. I'm going to save you a couple $1,000s.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. But, you know, so those are the things that I always kind of keep in mind when you're considering a search that is not through permission, or you don't already have a signed search warrant, is what are our exigent circumstances? Can we point to true exigency? And that's why we have to act.
You know? Yeah. So getting back to the question, it was, can they search my stuff without my permission? The answer is yes, if they have probable cause and it meets all the criteria thereof. If they're trying to get permission to search it, then they have to have your permission, and it has to be free and voluntary.
Yep.
All right. Have you ever been searched in college? No? Okay.
My room has.
Well, I always think back to, you know, we look at reasonableness in law enforcement. That's mm-hmm. a big, big thing that we look at.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. I was not involved in the initial response to this report, but a guy that I worked with, he did a fantastic job with this case. He got a call for a report of a burglary in progress at like 3 a.m, and it was mid-February in New England, so it was about negative mm-hmm. 102.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it was just cold as cold could be. And as he was responding to this burglary in progress at a residence, they said, you know, we believe the suspect has now left. He sees a vehicle. It's in a neighborhood, and as I said, it's like 3 a.m. It has no frost on the vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I noticed, is the vehicle had clearly been running for a while. And this officer, he said, I know who all like the newspaper delivery vehicles in the area were. He could point to all these specific details, these specific circumstances that prompted him to pull that vehicle over, and the vehicle was a hatchback. And he could see through the hatch, you know, the glass. And he's radioing to the officers on scene, and they said there is a laptop that was stolen, and it's the young lady who had it stolen out of the house. She goes to Wake Forest University, and there was a laptop on top of a backpack, and it had a property of Wake Forest University sticker across, almost like a bumper sticker across it. This was back when students didn't all have their own laptops. They got issued them
right.
from schools.
Yep.
So now he's developing those specific circumstances.
Exactly.
He's visibly seeing what he believes to be stolen property. He was able to, again, point to all those specific circumstances that prompted him to make that seizure of that vehicle mm-hmm. to stop it. And then we ultimately impounded the vehicle, and we did a search warrant based on his visual observations, recovered a lot of stolen property, recovered actually a shotgun stolen from a separate burglary from like 2 or 3 months prior, really broke open a big, big case. And it was all because that officer, the specificity, he was able to point to specific mm-hmm. details and circumstances that led him down that path of, I'll call it reasonableness, taking reasonable action on that vehicle.
Right.
And I was a detective at the time. I got called in to assist with the investigation. So that's when I come back to searches. It's all about, to me, that specificity and being able to point to reason, you know, the actions of a reasonable person.
Right, right. And to go a little bit further with constitutional law, just so the people listening know, your Fourth Amendment right is what protects you from unreasonable search and seizure. No warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, right?
Sure.
Yep. So hopefully that answers the question. You know, the answer is, it depends. It depends. So anyway, anything else on that?
No. I think that's a good question, though, because it impacts so many people, right?
It does.
Even if you're just getting, you're just getting pulled over for speed. It's a detainment of you. It's a seizure of you and your vehicle for a mm-hmm. brief period of time.
Yeah.
You know, people just need to understand the mindset, you know, the logic behind what is happening. That's what we do here on Police and the People, right?
Right.
It's, you know, bridge that gap.
Yep. Just so you understand, you have your perspectives. And one of the things that I love about New Hampshire is that it does afford people a little more protection of their rights.
Yes.
And I respect that, which is a state that I want to live in.
Sure. And especially because I'm retiring now, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that I'll be a civilian, I want those rights. When I'm a cop, you know, you get frustrated now.
Now I want them. Why are you here? Also, when you have kids, you know, you worry about them maybe getting giving permission to search when they don't have to. Maybe they think they have to, you know.
Sure.
But I know I think I trained you pretty well on that.
Yep. There's no hijinks going on in college, right, Lucas?
No.
All right, everyone. So we're going to wrap it up. In closing, if you know anyone who's looking to get into law enforcement, let me just say this. It is a target-rich environment right now. There are so many positions out there. We were just talking to
there's about to be one in my department here.
Exactly.
A few weeks.
Yeah, well, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Chief Capano of Manchester.
Yes.
And he said that they just got funding for, I think he said, 20 additional officers?
Yeah, for more, I mean, significantly more officers. So that's
right.
On top of just the
regular openings I already have.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and we hear this from every agency we talk to around New England. It's just, yeah, we're just hurting for people. We're hurting for people. So it's a target-rich environment. So if you're looking to get into law enforcement, we recommend that you go to our website, gs-pcc.com, and you buy our law enforcement test preparation guide. It is a soup-to-nuts, in-depth guide to help you avoid the pitfalls of a law enforcement testing process so that you are prepared and you're confident and you come out on top.
And we're not just about the candidates, were about the departments too. So if you are a department that is hurting to find quality candidates, reach out to us. Mm-hmm. You know, we may be able to connect you with people. We may be able to post your job openings on our newsletter, so on and so forth. So we're not just here to help the candidate get the job. We're here to help the agency find quality candidates. We come into contact with a lot of veterans. We come into contact with a lot of prospective, you know, college students who are prospective police candidates.
We do, yeah.
Or even working police officers who are looking to make a change to another agency.
Yeah.
Some of them good, some of them bad, but we, you know, we are here to help. So I would encourage any police department anywhere in the country that is looking to make that connection, feel free to reach out to Tim or I and see what we can do for you as far as connecting you with people.
Yeah, yeah. We just met a great batch of CJ students.
Oh, fantastic. Probably the best we've ever seen.
New England College. So if you want some people who are going to be looking at about a year for jobs.
Yeah, anywhere from 6 to 12 months, these people will be available. And we always see some good candidates.
I would
say this had the strongest group of candidates that we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we should probably think about it's a point in that process, in the 3-day process, to bring in or at least invite agencies that want to do some recruiting.
Yeah.
So, all right. Remember that we are now on Patreon. That is patreon.com/thepoliceandthepeople. Just head over there and make a donation to help us out, to help fund this podcast so that we can continue to bridge this gap between the police and the people.
So please subscribe to our podcast. We are on iTunes. We are now on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and Alexa.
And if you if you like social media, we are out there as well. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And if you would like to get our monthly newsletter, all you have to do is go to our website, which is gs-pcc.com, and you'll see a pop-up on the bottom right of the screen, which I promise you is the only pop-up. But all you have to do is put your email address in there, and you'll be on our list. And that is that. Anything else?
No.
Joshua?
That was a quickie, just the way you like it, I heard.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You know, I got some sleeping to do. All right. Anything from you there, Lucas?
No, all good for me.
All right, my man, a man of very few words.
Yeah. He's got a cold. He's getting over a cold. Give him a break.
All right, everyone, please stay safe out there, and until next time.